Today on ID the Future, we're happy to bring you another interview with Dr. Tom Woodward, host of the Universe Next Door syndicated radio broadcast. In conjunction with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, Dr. Woodward regularly interviews CSC scientists and scholars on various aspects of the debate over Darwinian evolution and intelligent design.
Welcome to the Universe Next Door. In the universe of evolution, creation, intelligent design is before us, and specifically, what are Christians to think about the theory of Neo-Darwinism, as it's called today? It's been modified in the course of the 20th century from the original theory, which dealt with sort of random variations. Now we're dealing with mutations in DNA. Of course, it was modified, but the basic idea was kept, 2.0 version. And so we're going to be dealing with this question and really bringing up some of the movements that are afoot to try to convince Christians that they should make peace with Neo-Darwinism, with at least some version of that. There's an organization out there going to be talking with Steve Meyer, the author of Darwin's Doubt. He is no stranger to this program. He is, of course, the director of the Center for Science and Culture at the Discovery Institute in Seattle, Washington. And we welcome you back to the program today. Thank you so much, Dr. Meyer, for taking time out from your busy schedule.
Tom, it's great to talk to you, as always.
Well, I'm very excited to hear about this debate that you had with, is it Carl Giberson, I believe it is?
That's right. Carl Giberson, a physicist who was one of the two founders of the BioLogos Institute that have been championing the idea of theistic evolution or evolutionary creation.
Evolutionary creationism. And that was with Francis Collins, the geneticist.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Who, of course, has gone on to other things, NIH direction, of course, the National Institutes of Health. So give us a sense of what led up to this debate, because I know it is available, just so we are making all the available venues to see this online. If you just tell our listeners where they could actually see this debate.
Yeah, the debate is actually on YouTube, and it's available through my website, darwinsdoubt.com. The debate was held at the University of Richmond in Virginia on April the 3rd. And the proposition before the House, as it were, was, should Christians embrace Darwinism? And Giberson argued in the affirmative, and I argued in the negative.
And this took place, of course, before a very intrigued audience at what the venue?
It was, I think, at a large church in the Richmond area.
Richmond,
put on
Virginia.
By the Richmond Study Center.
Okay.
And they had about 600 people there from in the university and from the community.
Right.
And it was a very spirited Q&A afterwards, and so a lot of energy that night.
Fantastic. Well, I know that we have been featuring from time to time the discussion on this. God, I believe, and evolution, those two topics do collide. I'm actually leading a discussion of that particular topic right now, considering what C.S. Lewis had to say on this. And of course, many people from the BioLogos side of this equation try to co-opt C.S. Lewis as a believer in their approach. And I believe that he is a very staunch critic of the unguided sort of Neo-Darwinism theory that was afoot in his day and actually was a prototype of intelligent design. I'll air my theory on that later on, of course, but I think...
Well, my colleague John West, who's edited the really phenomenal book, The Magician's Twin, which is about C.S. Lewis's view of science, makes that case very compellingly and actually has done research on some of the margin notes that Lewis wrote on the Origin of Species and other evolutionary writers, and it's clear Lewis was quite skeptical about the full-blown Neo-Darwinian theory.
Very good. And you can link to the three videos produced by Discovery Institute on Lewis's view, not only of scientific materialism, but also of the critique of Darwin and Darwinism and evolution in general, but also his views, his very interesting views on traces of design in the universe. But now, Dr. Steve Meyer, if you would just lead us into what was the setup of the debate with Dr. Giberson, this physicist? What was the point being debated? And lead us into some of the action.
Yeah, the debate was whether Christians should embrace Darwin or Darwinism. And Giberson started with an opening statement making a number of arguments for what's called the universal common descent, the idea that all organisms share a common ancestor. And he left it right there. I then made an opening statement in which I explained that the really central issue is not the question of ancestry or whether life has changed over time. There are different definitions of evolution. One is that life has changed over time. One is the idea of common ancestry. But the third meaning of evolution is the really critical one. And that's the idea that there's an unguided, undirected process, namely natural selection acting on random mutations, that has produced all the forms of life we see and the appearance of design that living systems manifest. And that's a core and defining idea of what's called modern neo-Darwinism, the modern theory of evolution that incorporates, as you mentioned, the idea of mutation into the mechanism of natural selection. And so I explained to the audience that I wasn't actually going to spend much time challenging Dr. Guyberson's arguments for universal common descent, though I am actually skeptical of that idea, because the more important issue is whether there's a mechanism that can generate all the new forms of life and whether there's an unguided, undirected mechanism that can explain away the appearance of design. And I explained a number of the arguments of my new book, Darwin's Doubt, to make the case that the natural selection random mutation mechanism is not adequate to explain the origin of fundamental innovation in the history of life, and it does not explain away the most striking appearances of design in living systems, in particular, the information that's present in all living systems, the digital code stored in DNA, and other forms of information that are necessary to build new forms of life. So I argued that there is not a mechanism that can explain the new forms of life that arise in the history of life, and there's not a mechanism that explains away the appearance of design. Thus, we actually have evidence of actual design, not just the appearance or illusion of design.
Fantastic. Today with us, Dr. Stephen Meyer, author of Darwin's Doubt, also Signature in the Cell. Both of these books, are available virtually everywhere on the internet, including our own bookstore at apologetics.org. Dr. Steve Meyer talking today about the Guyberson interesting debate that percolated in front of a very fascinated, riveted live audience there in the state of Virginia. Would you go into, before we have to take a break here in a couple minutes, just seize on one of the arguments that you shared with that audience about the inefficiency, the inability of random mutation to do much of anything?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's really an ironic twist in things right now. You have all these religious groups, Christian groups, saying, hey, we need to accept Darwinism in order to have intellectual credibility. But they're saying that at just the time when people working in evolutionary theory are recognizing that the modern form of Darwinism, neo-Darwinism, does not have a mechanism that can accomplish the acts of creativity that are necessary for the evolutionary process to be credible. And one of the ways I illustrated that was to explain a problem having to do with the mutation mechanism. It turns out that if you want to build a fundamentally new form of life, if you want to build what's called a body plan, a new animal body plan, that you need a very particular kind of mutation. You need a mutation that occurs early in the development of an organism in the first few cell divisions. And the reason for that is that as animals develop, cells divide and they go from 2 to 4 to 8 to 16, the number of cells grows exponentially. And if you want a mutation to affect all the cells that are going to go into a new animal body plan, you've got to get it early so that the event that takes place in the first few cell divisions will ramify out into all the future cell divisions as the organism develops. But it turns out that those are the very kind of mutations that are never advantageous. In fact, they're always lethal, and they're called developmental mutations. And the reason for that is that when a mutation occurs early in the development of an animal, it is hard to calibrate it such that you get the right effect in each cell downstream. And so these early acting body plan mutations create a problem. It's called the problem of embryonic lethals. Mm. So the very kind of mutation you would need to build a new form of animal life is the kind that never occurs, an early-acting beneficial body plan mutation. You get mutations that occur later in the development of animals, in somatic cells, in body cells, and they may be advantageous, but the kind you need to build a whole new body plan never happens. And so it really poses a huge problem for the neo-Darwinian mechanism. How would you ever build a fundamentally new form of animal life, such as occur in the Cambrian explosion, which is the subject of my new book? These big changes don't seem to be explicable in terms of the standard Darwinian mechanism.
Fantastic. Dr. Stephen Meyer, author of Darwin's Doubt, we have just 1 minute left. In 30 seconds or less, what did Dr. Guyberson say, if anything, in response to your information?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I made four such arguments, all of which were reprised from my book, Darwin's Doubt. Mm-hmm. And about the lack of creative power for the neo-Darwinian mechanism, showing that mutation selection can't generate the information and the body plan that arises in the Cambrian explosion. He did not make a rebuttal to any of those four arguments. He didn't even try.
You're kidding.
And I'm drawing a lot of these insights from cutting-edge stuff in evolutionary theory. Mm. He repaired to these arguments for common descent, which... Yeah. As I argued before, is a secondary issue.
Yeah, it's really beside the point. Well, we are excited to be able to cover this incredible debate with Dr. Steve Meyer himself, talking about his interaction with Dr. Carl Guyberson. We'll be right back on The Universe Next Door. I'm Tom Woodward, your host. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Universe Next Door, where today our focus is really zooming in on the issue, not just of Darwinian evolution and the plausibility of it, but why in the world would groups of scientists who are both, let's say, evangelical Christians, conservative, biblically minded believers, and scientists, why would they promote the notion of, let's say, accommodation, of stopping the criticism of Darwin? I've actually heard people say, we'll be hindering our outreach if we criticize Darwin. And I thought to myself, truth is truth. If a theory is strong and robust, then it will carry itself. If it is weak and feeble and filled with gaps that are not just temporary gaps, but they're literally tissues.
Well, they're fundamental conceptual problems that are afflicting the theory.
Yeah.
And they're causing a number of leading evolutionary theorists to start to formulate entirely new approaches to the whole question of evolution, new evolutionary theories.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, one of the things I do in Darwin's Doubt is I have a couple of chapters on the new theories of evolution that have been proposed. There are about six of them that I explain and analyze.
Mm-hmm.
And they, better than anything else, show that neo-Darwinism is dead, because the leading people in evolutionary biology are moving on, trying to come up with new mechanisms that will accomplish what the mutation selection mechanism can't.
They wouldn't be building escape rafts if the boat wasn't going down.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I show in the book is that these new theories, many of them have some advantages over neo-Darwinism,
mm-hmm.
but they all, to each new proposal, fail to account for the origin of the genetic and the epigenetic information that's mm-hmm. required to build new forms of animal life. So mm-hmm. they have some advantages over old-fashioned neo-Darwinism, but they still don't solve the fundamental problem of the origin of the information that's necessary to build these animals. And so what really gets revealed by these new efforts is that there's an a priori commitment to some form of materialistic evolutionary theory. People aren't willing to reject a materialist approach, but they're willing to try anything to try to save a materialist approach, and that they haven't been able to come up with a theory that explains the origin of information really reveals the prior commitment they have to materialism mm-hmm. rather than that there is any successful form of evolutionary theory on offer.
Right. And if I could just unpack for us, maybe some of our listeners are maybe not as familiar with as others with this concept of materialism, which is also known as naturalism or physicalism. It's the notion that the universe is ultimately physical stuff, you know, matter and energy, or moving around in a space-time continuum. And of course, a priori commitments are ones that are held before the evidence is laid on the table. It's kind of like a deeply held down to the level of the heart. You might say unquestioned, at least to some level.
Well, so, it gets right to your theme of your wonderful program, Tom, of looking at competing worldviews. Every worldview has to answer the question, what is the thing or the entity or the process from which everything else comes?
Mm-hmm.
And the materialistic worldview or the naturalistic worldview says the thing or the entity or the process from which everything else comes is matter and energy mm-hmm. and the material processes that ensue as matter gets into motion. So the Darwinian mechanism of mutation and natural selection, the neo-Darwinian mechanism, has provided an indispensable plank in support of this materialistic worldview, because it gives a big part of the answer to how everything got here. It says all the new forms of life we see arose as a result of a purely undirected material process, mutations and natural selection.
Right. Well, that serves the role of prime reality, as Jim Sire calls it.
Exactly.
The God substitute.
It helps answer the prime reality question, which is the first question that every worldview has to answer.
So they may not sing a song to it or bow down to it, but it's the ultimate stuff.
It's the ultimate thing that explains everything else. Exactly.
Right. Well, then if matter is prime reality, then that is the base of their philosophy. So if a Christian then subscribes to a system that is at least based on that is incoherent. Let's talk about what I loved what I think you had shared. Doug Axmade, your colleague, who is a incredible molecular biologist, done fantastic experimental bench research supporting intelligent design, tinkering with DNA and knocking out pieces of proteins and just incredible discoveries. Doug Axmade, an important point. Would you bring that out if you would?
Well, right. We've had a number of conversations with theistic evolutionists who make the argument that you made or that you repeated, which is that they're saying, gee, we have to accept Darwin or Darwinism or modern neo-Darwinism, or else we will bring intellectual disrepute to our faith. And Doug's response to that has been, hey, listen, before we bend over backwards trying to accommodate Christian theology, or Jewish theology for that matter, to this materialistic theory of origins, can we first make sure that that materialistic theory, namely neo-Darwinism, is true? Because at the very time, and this is the irony, at the very time you have so many religious people pushing to accommodate religious belief, adapt or modify religious belief in order to make it consistent with neo-Darwinian theory, you have leading evolutionary theorists jettisoning the theory and saying, hey, we need a new theory, or if they're not saying it, they're busy getting about the business of proposing new theories of evolution.
Yeah.
Now, those theories, as I mentioned, are also strictly materialistic, but that just reveals that there is this prior to evidence commitment to a materialistic approach, not that there is adequate evidence in support of any evolutionary theory that is capable. There is no evolutionary theory that can explain the origin of the big changes in the history of life, the origin of new animal forms, or the origin of the information needed to build them.
Well, let's say that someone says, well, we have good new theories coming on, natural genetic engineering. We have self-organization theory. What would you say to that?
Well, I'm delighted that we could get it, have people would raise the issue with that level of specificity, because then it becomes possible to analyze the theories and to critique them. Both of those theories are very interesting. But as I show in Darwin's Doubt, in both cases, self-organization and natural genetic engineering, the processes that these theorists identify and describe, and they are real processes, only ensue once you have a large initial complement of genetic and epigenetic information. In other words, there are processes that we can describe at work in the development of animals that look to produce a kind of self-organization. But that self-organization only occurs once you have a lot of genetic information to start with. So there are processes of order that arise in the developmental trajectory of an animal, but those predictable processes only happen if you already have a lot of information. So, and the same thing is true of natural genetic engineering. Natural genetic engineering has been proposed by Jim Shapiro. It's some really interesting and fascinating work where Shapiro describes essentially pre-programmed adaptive capacity that organisms have, so that if there are environmental changes of different kinds, it will trigger the expression of certain genes and proteins. But all that presupposes the prior existence of pre-programmed adaptive capacity. In other words, he doesn't explain where the pre-programming comes from. He says, if you have this pre-programming, there's a lot of responses that the organism makes to the environment that are not random. They're not Darwinian in that sense. But they also, to the extent that they're real, and I think many of these processes are very much real, they all depend on prior genetic information. So in both cases, these two very cutting-edge new theories of evolution presuppose but don't explain the information that's necessary to build new forms of animal life.
Well, with us today, Dr. Steve Myrie is the author of Darwin's Doubt, which has been a best-selling book for almost a year here now. Darwin's Doubt is a fantastic tour of the evidence. It's really a multi-layered story, story upon story upon story. I couldn't put it down. I'm having my students read it for our honors seminar, if you want to check out that for your high school junior or senior or college student. And Darwin's Doubt, Dr. Steve Myrie, is just, I think, the most powerful science book that touches the fossils I've read in my life, by far, by a mile. So I know you get a lot of mail, fan mail, maybe some hate mail, so from Darwinists. But I mean, did the book come up in the discussion with Dr. Guyberson? And just if you would just remind us again how people can tune into this debate at your own website.
Right. Yeah. Just go to darwinsdoubt.com and then click on about the book. And there's a menu of options, one of which is audio and video. And we have a YouTube channel on that audio and video button, and you click on that, and the debate is there. It's also available right now. We're featuring it right now on my Facebook page, Dr. Steven C. Myrie Facebook.
But, fantastic.
Yeah, it was a really interesting debate, because in some ways we were at cross purposes to each other. He wanted to defend common descent, and I wanted to show that the important thing that evolutionary theory offers is a causal explanation for the origin of new biological form, that it was increasingly being recognized that modern neo-Darwinism has failed to offer such a causal explanation, and that this is a really big shift in evolutionary theory and a big gap, a big lacuna. And what that means is that the key thing that Darwinism always claimed to explain was the appearance of design, and it's now clear that it has failed to explain that appearance of design in biological systems. And so what we really are back to is a pre-1859 situation in which we have apparent design with no causal explanation other than real design as to where that appearance came from. And to establish that, I needed to make a number of arguments showing the inadequacy of the neo-Darwinian mechanism. And on that score, Dr. Guyberson was strangely silent. He didn't offer any rebuttal at all. And that's something that your listeners can check out for themselves by watching the debate.
Fantastic. Well, we've had an amazing review of not only this topic, but a real insight into what happened in the debate that Dr. Steve Meyer was able to have with Dr. Carl Guyberson. Dr. Steve Meyer, you've also, of course, have just had an amazing interaction here at the University Presbyterian Church in your area. We expect that we'll be able to maybe cover a little bit of that. You wouldn't mind me asking you about that maybe on a later broadcast.
Yeah, absolutely. The debate about theistic evolution is breaking out all over the Christian and the Jewish world, for that matter. And I think there are both theological and scientific problems with the theistic evolutionist position. And I've emphasized those in both of the debates. The scientific problems are the ones we've discussed already, that there is not a causal explanation or causal mechanism that can account for the origin of new biological form coming from neo-Darwinian theory. But also, theologically, it's problematic because neo-Darwinism is affirming that a purely undirected, unguided mechanism produces everything that we see, which creates a dilemma for people of faith, because if they embrace that as the mechanism of creation, then they're either saying God had nothing to do with it, or else they're saying that God directed an undirected process, which is logically incoherent. Not even God can direct an undirected process, because as soon as he directs it, it's no longer unguided.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stephen Meyer, and thank you for listening to The Universe Next Door.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2014. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.